Blog Talk Radio.
I'll be there in a little while.
Hosted by Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, a research psychologist, psychoanalyst, and author of What Price Power? An In-Depth Study of Professional Women in a Relationship. She's an expert on depression, women's issues, and attaining happiness. Dr. Birnbaum has been featured on Oprah 2020 in some of the biggest TV radio venues in the world. Now, without further ado, here's your host of Living Out Loud, Dr. Frieda Birnbaum.
Hi. Hi, Ryan. Thank you very much.
Hello, Dr. Frieda Birnbaum.
Hi. How have you been? Good to speak to you.
Unbelievable. You're at drfrieda.com. And our understanding is that you just came off a fantastic interview on the Bill Cunningham Show, so congratulations. Everyone
yes.
is picking up on you. What were you discussing on the show?
It was a great show, and I had to hang up for this show. So I don't know if he meant it. He's calling me back tomorrow or another day. But we were discussing everything. We were discussing pregnant women and why men cheat. 1 out of 10 men cheat on their wives, and why would they do such a thing when their wife really is looking forward to a precious time in their relationship. So, you know, it's a sad commentary on the need to have a sexual relationship with someone else when you can have one with your wife whose hormones are raging. And that could be the best sex ever. I guess they don't know about that. But it's a small amount, 1 out of 10. And the reason also is that women are often preoccupied when they're pregnant, and other women fill an emotional void, believe it or not. Not a sexual one as much as an emotional void. And these men actually feel guilty afterwards. 66% of these men feel guilty after having done such a thing. So, you know, it's a lot to be discussed why they need to do it to begin with. You know, men should look at themselves often with their stomachs, that they look like they're 3 months pregnant.
They look pregnant. And they're just disgusting.
And they have to look at all these girls half their age, and they forget about who they are. So, you know, times are changing, though. Men are becoming more physical. I think.
Could be physically, the stomachs are
physically attractive. Not physical, but physically attractive. That's what I meant to say. But, so it was an interesting topic to look at, why people are fooling around on their wives when they can have the best relationship with them at home.
Tia, on our show today, on your show today, you have an amazing individual. This is somebody in a world of comedy. It's dominated by men, but there are a few women who go in this business and are very successful. We're lucky to have one of them today. Her name is Vanessa Hollingshead. She was discovered back in 1994, and she's appeared on Comedy Central several times. She regularly headlines some of the biggest venues in the country. She's very much in demand, and man, does she have a very interesting background, and she's a very strong individual who overcame a lot of these trials and tribulations. So without further ado, here is Vanessa Hollingshead. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. It's great to be on the show.
Hi, Vanessa. How are you?
I'm good. You're like my first psychologist or therapist I've talked to in a very long time, so this is good for me.
Well, I'm sure you'll do well, so you have so much to say, I don't even know where to start with you. So tell us a little bit about your history. I know I was reading about it, that you were involved with comedy at a very early age. How did you know? When was the first time you realized that you were funny?
I think I knew I didn't realize I was fun. I mean, I was an actress at a very early age, but I had a very odd lifestyle with my parents and their affiliations with Timothy Leary and LSD. So I was in and out of a lot of different homes, and I was very sarcastic, and I actually wanted to be a Shakespearean actress. And my roommate said, when I was working at temp job, she said, "You're so much funnier than the sitcoms I see when you come home and tell me what your day is like. Did you ever thought to try a hand at stand-up comedy?" And I said, no, I was absolutely petrified. And then after waiting 4 hours to get on one night, I went to an open mic. I immediately felt that I belonged, that this was my home, that, you know, I could go at my own rate. It would depend how much I write and how hard I was willing to work, and that I wasn't dependent on other actors or industry seeing me, that I just had to get really good. And that was the beginning, and I kind of never looked back. I don't think I've taken more than 3 weeks in the whole 22 years I've been doing it from being a stand-up.
Wow, that's very impressive. So there's no turning back, you're saying. There's nothing you would do to change it. So looking forward, is there something you're doing different, or you're looking forward to anything new, or you are just enjoying where you are and what you've been doing?
I wish I could enjoy what I'm doing. That's so much the process of what I'm like, to try and be in the moment and really love what you do. I absolutely love what I do. But there's things I want to say. I mean, as you get older, you know, when you're younger, it's about weight and men and smoking, and then it might be about addictions and overcoming addictions and family and parents and being a New York woman and my viewpoint. And then as I've gotten older, when I've seen some kind of the injustice that's been going on in the world, it's like, is there a funny way that I can actually talk about this? If it would be maybe about the decriminalization of drugs, or what's going on with the drugs, or the pharmaceutical companies, or the, you know, inequity in America with the super rich and the super poor, and how do I make that funny without sounding like I'm on a soapbox? So it becomes incredibly challenging. And then I'd like to start doing more acting again, because I started doing some indies, which I loved, and the, you know, being a stand-up comedy, I didn't realize, you know, I was kind of acting as I was going along, so. And to start doing some more writing in that area, and to constantly keep, you always have to stay new and present, because comedy is a young business. So as you get older, the audience keeps getting younger, and, you know, you don't want to just do nursing homes, and you want to find a way that you can, that you always have a youthful approach at seeing things, and that any age can enjoy what you have to say, and any sex and any religion. So I try and make my comedy as all-encompassing as I can with a strong point of view.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
A lot of work, yeah, because you want to make sure you're supporting the needs of the younger generation as well as contributing, you know, because you are wiser now and older. So
right.
There's both sides of you that have to be expressed, and that's really, you know, difficult to have to encompass all of that. But to be funny about
technology comes in. I mean, it's like I'm so bad with technology. So one of my jokes is, I'm in the process of adopting an Indian kid so I could figure out how to work my cell phone.
That's funny.
Yeah, I'll take
that's
this
really good.
My savior if you can bring me into the 21st century. So it does really well. And then I talk about teaching my mother the internet, how people know the internet, you know, if it's broke, not don't fix it, and all these new apps. So I've got the young people that understand Instagram and Spotify and Vine and Tumblr, and then I've got the older people that are like, what's wrong with the typewriter? You know, so it's like the two worlds that I try and put together in such a way that, you know, I can hit both of them and have fun with both of them.
That makes it even funnier.
Yeah, and I do a lot of talking to my audience, because sometimes I'm lazy and I don't get my writing done that I should, and I'll fall back on doing so much improvising when I have an audience, and then put the slip the jokes in, so no one even knows that I'm making jokes. You just think, well, she's really witty, but you know it's all really kind of figured out. But sometimes I'll work very spontaneously, because it really will make me feel alive when I get so sick of hearing my own jokes.
Yeah, that's the best. Those are the best jokes when you're connecting to the audience. So tell me, you know, you sound like you're a businesswoman also, because you
no,
really
I'm
put
horrible
yourself.
At business. I'm so horrible at business. It's like I need to get good at business. I'm really good at sounding good. I'm really good at writing. I'm really good at working with people. I'm really good at multitasking. I am not good at business. I'm learning. I'm finally learning how to ask what I'm worth. You know, as a woman, I always took the back seat, or I always settled, or I always felt it wasn't good enough. And I'm finally kind of coming into my own, where it's like, no, I'm sorry, I won't work for that. You know, or I need this help. Like, no, it's all new for me. It's a new muscle. Not good
but
at
how
it.
But how did you promote yourself, Vanessa? You must have done something to have gotten where you've gotten. You didn't start from this place.
Well, I remember talking to my friend, and I said, I will win over an audience member. I will win over one person at a time if I have to, but I will be known, and people will know who I am, and even if it's word of mouth, because I can't figure out how to do the I barely tweet. I've got to get a little bit better with social media. And then a lot of word of mouth, a booker will see me, a comedian will see me, and they'll recommend me. So a lot of it has been word of mouth, but there's such another market I can hit and understand. And what I'm trying to do is the money I make doing gigs out, you know, outside of New York, I try and invest in my company and invest in hiring people that are good at that and can either teach me or can help me with more social media and putting some of my clips up on YouTube and all that other stuff, or coming up with ideas that I can, you know, actually try and sell. So, no, I've got to get much more in the loop. I just know what I need to do, so I do sound like I've got a good head on my shoulders. So, no.
Well, that's
Frieda,
a big part of it. Yeah.
What?
Dr. Frieda and Vanessa, what I'd like to do is I'd like to ask you both a question. Dr. Frieda, you've worked with several individuals over the long course of your career, and you know some of them obviously are looking to overcome mental challenges. And if, Vanessa, you work in the business of stand-up comedy. I'm sure you see a lot of individuals who are working through their issues on that stage. I wanted to ask you both, what are some of the defining qualities or mental challenges you feel that comedians face? And from Dr. Frieda, from your perspective, is what are some of the ways that these comedians can adapt and to kind of heal themselves or overcome some of these mental challenges?
One of the challenges I notice is we spend a remarkable amount of time alone, and we have a very hard time dealing with rejection, and we have a tendency to self-medicate, whether it's drugs and alcohol, or food or gambling or women, and or not writing. So we'll tend to just kind of make our world very small, and we'll tend to isolate from not feeling enough. And we'll feel great when we're on stage, but the second we get off stage is that big empty hole. And I think comedians grapple with this. It's not talked about a lot, but it's certainly known, you know, the certain demons that we have that we try and overcome. And the challenge is you work with a lot of people on stage, but you're very much alone.
Okay.
That's interesting because, you know, it reminds me why you're funny to begin with, because we can all identify with all this pain and the way you look at life. The only difference is between you and other people is that you're able to put it into words. And you're able to really pull out all this material that you have inside you. So we can all identify with everything you've said, and you stand out because you're able to say these things. And I think that's what makes a person a great comedian, really. Was that your question to me, Ryan? I don't even remember.
Well, it was they were directing towards what I was saying, Frieda, is that, you know, based on what Vanessa's saying, is that, you know, they all have people that they need to overcome these challenges. But from your perspective, in treating some of the individuals like this, what are some of the things that you recommend? I mean, what are some of the ways that people can have a greater acceptance of themselves?
Well, you know, but a greater acceptance of yourself is seeing that when you're a productive human being, when you relate to other people, you know, cognitive behavior, which means watch yourself. What are you doing with yourself? So when you're doing something that is supportive and positive, you have to be able to acknowledge it, because depression is aggression turned inside you. when you use mm-hmm. that in a way that you can use that energy, that depression will no longer be there. And that's why even talking about it as a comedian should really be part of that aggressive behavior. And so you are on the right track with this. And, you know, being alone, I mean, writers, a lot of people, a lot of fields that really requires that alone time. As long as you're not lonely, and that's a whole different statement. If you're lonely, then what is it, where is the void in your life? What is it that's missing? And it's not necessarily another human being. It could be something that you're not fulfilling for yourself, something that you
right.
haven't done, an experience.
Right.
Maybe you're not having enough downtime. That could make you lonely as well, not only being alone. Having fun experiences can make you feel lonely, even if you're with somebody. So those are the things that you need to question, how full your life is, and if you have everything that you need in an expressive manner to be able to fill all your questions and needs, and if you have anger or hostility, why is it, where is it coming from, how do you
well,
get
I
rid
took
of
a
it?
Long break. I took a long break off of relationships, and I went into, you know, I went into, and when I got sober, and, you know, I did what was expected of me, and I just stayed away, and I just started going on, like, OkCupid. And the dating site, it looks like America's Most Wanted. I mean, they're just not my idea of attractive, you know, or to catch a predator. It's like, and I've been on a couple dates, and a lot of these guys are players, or they're under 40, and I'm hardly, I don't, you know, my cougar days are over with. So I just say, okay, I think it's meant to be that I spend more time writing, more time with my friends. I do paint. I do write, and I do, but it's that, you know, some people, I've been trying to pray and meditate more to kind of quiet that and hear the small, quiet voice. Because sometimes, but to add more fun into my life, because so much of my life is just discipline about being a comedian and being the best I could be. And sometimes I just need to be silly and let my hair down. Sometimes someone's got to make me laugh. So I'm learning how to just, like, give myself some of those days. But sometimes if I'm out on a ship, I'm out at sea, everyone's having a great time, there's food, there's alcohol, there's gambling, there's everything all over, everyone's in a relationship, and I just can, you know, and that's the quiet time that instead of being so frightened or being overwhelmed or overeating or smoking or drinking, is the time that I've tried to spend that time either writing, self-reflection, watching the children, and it's all kind of new behavior to kind of find a way to deal with that. But I really would love to be in a healthy relationship. I would constantly attract either other addicts that I would try and win over and rescue, and I couldn't. So this time I thought I'm going to fix myself to attract or to vibrate
Absolutely.
At a higher level to attract
Absolutely.
Someone more
That's
positive.
The only way.
But it's
That's...
not the guy. There's something wrong with me. So I don't.
Well, you
no
know what? You're on the right track.
Right.
Well, you're on the right track, so if you're healthy, that's when you meet. And not only that, when you're in a good place, you attract people. When you're not in a good place, when you're too needy or you're
yeah.
suffering, in another, people pick up on that, the way you project, and then that's going
right.
to push everybody away. So you're absolutely right. You have to be happy first before you can find happiness for yourself. So you know what you have to do. It's just a matter of time. And
yeah, it
that
takes
right
time,
person.
And I don't, and I'm so impatient, and I just keep saying, you know, give time, time. It's a, don't be in a, it'll work out. Life will unfold the way it's meant to be, and I'm a little bit more in acceptance, but it's been a process of reaching that point. I didn't suddenly say, well, okay, I'm just going to accept what life brings me. It's been a lot of work to get to that point, but I don't regret it. Because once you've learned a way to accept yourself or accept life kind of on life's terms, or you don't have the addiction issues, you wouldn't trade it for anything because it's so hard won.
Absolutely. Just imagine you would have been in many bad relationships if you haven't been already. And that's painful
oh, yeah.
in itself. Right? Am I
yes.
right? You know,
and
that's a lot of pain.
Guy. I still miss the drug addict. You know, I couldn't believe that he would make pot more important than me. And I just said, I don't care if you go to an AA meeting high or get high after the meeting. Will you just go? Because I love you, and I'm willing to work with you on this. And it wasn't enough. And what I would do is I reject myself. I guess I'm not good enough or funny enough or something enough for him to make pot more important. And that's where the self, you know, the self-hatred or the self-esteem plummets down. And that's where you have to say, his addiction is stronger than your love. That's how he was made. And don't take it personally. And that's
absolutely
some of the work I've been trying to get through, you know. But
well, you
know,
you always have to say, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt because what you're saying is so important. You know, women have always often been taught that others come first. And then when you're trying to fix and it doesn't work, you try harder. And, you know, the first person is yourself. And that women have been taught that that's being selfish. But no, you have to be there for yourself first to have a strong ego. And then you know when you're happy. If somebody takes away your happiness, you know the difference. But you have to be in that place first to know when it's not there anymore. If you don't have it to begin with, then you're used to suffering no matter who you're with. So you have to always come first. You have to always know that you can give yourself a lot that somebody else may not give you. They don't know what you need. Then it's two people who add excitement to each other rather than becoming one and just being subservient, because women often complain about that anyway, that they feel controlled, but they set it up. So what you're telling me makes a lot of sense. And what you're telling me also is that when you meet somebody this time around, it will be the right one because you know what it is to look for.
Yeah,
so it's,
and it's like, but it's taken me a long time to get over this person. He was very, he had a lot of good qualities, and I kind of hung in, and it was the letting go. I should have let him go a long time ago, and I kept hoping the phone would ring, and he'd say, I've gotten sober, or I thought a lot about what you said. I'd go into fantasy, which was part of my childhood stuff, where hoping my parents wouldn't be so addicted and that my love or maybe they would have a change of heart would save them. And those are some of the patterns, because John was kind of representing my mother. And once I got clear on that, I was able to kind of, like, forgive him and forgive myself for being so attracted to him and then just kind of move on. But it took so long. And many, many nights where I thought of him obsessively and crazily. I didn't act out. I didn't call him because I wasn't drinking. But it was the longing. It was the hunger for connection. And that's where sometimes I felt like I cheated myself on some time or other people that I could have found attractive.
But don't be hard on yourself, because it's not a coincidence. A lot of people pick, partners that are similar to their parents, that they couldn't resolve issues at home, and they try to resolve it with the people they pick. So this is not a coincidence. So you can't beat yourself with this. We can't beat yourself up with this. But now that you know that, and you've gotten away and you've separated yourself more from your past, you won't have to fix your past anymore. As a child, you were helpless. You couldn't do anything about it. Now as an adult, you can. So why go near something that's so toxic, that's so, you know, difficult to heal? And when you're in a place where you can say, you know what, I'm no longer that person. So my needs have changed. And who am I now? And what is it that I need now? Then you'll know what to look for. So it sounds like you're really absolutely ready for that.
Yeah, I feel ready for that. And, you know, if it's online or if it's somewhere else, you know, I know what I don't want. I mean, the second I there was somebody I thought was very attractive, and at the end of his profile it said, a really productive stoner. And I'm like, oh, no, just stay away. Just stay away.
But you notice it's not a coincidence. So there's something about this that's reinforcing, something about it that's very familiar to you, even if it's not something that you want. Because, you know, we get comfortable with what's familiar.
Yes. Yeah, or what we know is love. I mean, what feels like love. And sometimes when a partner treats you in the manner that your parents treated you, it just feels so right. even though it's so wrong.
That's absolutely true. But see, you have the answers. It's just a matter now of just going ahead and acting on these questions. Do you hear my son calling me from into my office? I have my office here.
Yeah, I thought there was a cat. I was like, boy, she's got a loud cat.
Well, I have a gray-headed macaw here that calls me mommy, too, but I noticed the difference in the voices. Yeah, and he's upstairs.
I'm a big bird lover.
Oh, yeah, well, this bird is great because he keeps calling me mommy all the time, and I can't get away from him, but it's sort of a nightmare, but that's part of my life here.
Well, they're attached.
And now, what?
We only have a minute left, and Frida, I was wondering if we can talk about where Vanessa, where will you be performing, and what is a website that we can reach you on?
I've got to get my website fixed and updated. But I will be at the MGM in Las Vegas all of next week from the 2nd until the 8th, which is Brad Garrett's room from Everybody Loves Raymond. So I'll be there working with Rich Voss.
Well, sounds wonderful.
Wonderful.
So this is something that people can go and see you there and perform?
They can see me in Vegas, yes. And it's
perfect.
A wonderful room. Yeah. And,
well,
Well, I did two episodes of Comics Unleashed, which should be airing in March, and that will be on CBS.
Very good. So you're busy.
Yeah,
I'm keeping busy.
Yes, I'm keeping busy.
And you're doing well, and I think my son's going to strangle me soon. My duty calls. Thank you so much, and we'd love to have you on again sometime.
Okay.
Be well, Vanessa.
Okay,
Take care. Thank you so much.
You
bye-bye.
Too.
Thank
bye-bye.
You.
Thank you.
Lots of luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you, Ryan. Talk to you later.
Thank you. Okay, and Frida, where can people learn more about you?
Near future will be your book called...
Where can people learn more about you? Okay, you'll go learn more about Dr. Frida, drfrida.com.